Nudged presents Freaky Families by Diana Wynne Jones, narrated by Penelope Rawlins. The Four Grannies. Chapter 1. Erg's dad and Emily's mum found they had to go away to a conference for 4 days, leaving Erg and Emily at home.
I want a house to come back to, said Erg's dad,
thinking of the time Erg had borrowed the front door to make an underground fort in the garden.
We'd better ask one of the grannies to come and look after them, said Emily's mum,
knowing that if Erg did not borrow a thing, Emily could be trusted to fall over it and break it. Emily was younger than Erg, but she was enormous. She needed bigger shoes than Erg's dad. There were 4 grannies to choose from, because Erg's dad and Emily's mum had both been divorced before they married one another. Granny 1 was strict. She wore her hair scraped back from her forbidding face, and her favourite saying was,
"Life is always saying no."
Since life did not have a voice, Granny 1 spoke for it and said no about once every 5 minutes. Granny 2 was a worrier. She could worry about anything. She was fond of ringing up in the middle of the night to ask if Emily was getting enough vitamins, or, in her special hushed worrying voice, if Erg ought to be sent to a special school. Granny 3 was very rich and very stingy. She was the one Emily hated most. Granny 3 always arrived with a big box of chocolates. She would give Erg's dad a chocolate and Emily's mum a chocolate and eat 6 herself and take the rest of the box away with her when she went. Erg agreed with Emily that this was mean, but he thought Granny 3 was more fun than the others because she had a new car and different coloured hair every time she came. Granny 4 was a saint. She was gentle and quavery and wrinkled. If Erg and Emily quarrelled in front of her, or even spoke loudly, Granny 4 promptly came over faint and had to have a doctor. Granny 4 was the one Erg and Emily chose to look after them. If you could avoid making Granny 4 feel faint, she usually let you do what you wanted. But when Emily's mum rang Granny 4 to ask her, Granny 4 was faint already. She had been let down over a Save the Children bazaar and was too ill to come. So, despite the shrill groans of Erg and the huge moans of Emily, Emily's mum phoned Granny 1. To Erg's relief, Granny 1 was going on holiday and could not come either. So that left Granny 2, because Granny 3 had never been known to look after anyone but herself. But Erg's dad phoned Granny 3 all the same, hoping she might pay for someone to look after Erg and Emily. Granny 3 said she thought it was an excellent idea for Emily and Erg to look after themselves. Erg's dad phoned Granny 2.
What?
Exclaimed Granny 2, hushed and worried.
Leave dear Erg and poor little Emily all alone for all that time?
But we're only going to Scotland for 4 days,
Erg's dad protested.
I know, dear, said Granny too, but I'm thinking of you. Scotland is covered with oil these days and so dangerous.
Erg and Emily were not looking forward to Granny too. They waved their parents off gloomily and sat about waiting for Granny 2 to arrive. She was a long time coming. Emily fidgeted round the living room like an impatient horse, knocking things over right and left. Erg felt an idea coming on. He wandered away to the kitchen to see what he could find. All the food was wrapped up and carefully labelled so that Granny 2 could find it. But Erg found a biscuit tin. It had holes in the lid from the time he had started a caterpillar farm. Inside were the works of a clock he had once borrowed. It seemed a good beginning for an invention. He collected other things. An egg beater, the blades off the mixer, a sardine tin opener, and a skewer. He took them all back to the living room and began fitting them together. The invention was already looking quite promising when the phone rang. Emily bounced up to answer it, and quite naturally, she trod on the invention as she went and squashed it flat. Erg roared with rage. It was Granny Two on the phone.
"I'm terribly sorry, dear. I got halfway when I thought I'd left my kitchen tap on. I'm just setting out again now."
"Was your tap on?" asked Emily.
"No, dear, but just suppose it had been."
Emily went back to the living room to find Erg still roaring with rage.
"Look what you've done! You've ruined my invention!"
Emily looked at the invention. It looked like a squashed biscuit tin with egg beaters sticking out of it.
"It's only a squashed biscuit tin," she said, "and you ought to put those egg beaters back."
But Erg had just discovered that the hand beater fitted beautifully into a split in the side of the biscuit tin.
"You're not supposed to have any of them," said Emily.
But Erg took no notice. He wound the handle of the egg beater. The battered metal of the tin went in and out as if it were breathing, and the pieces of clock inside made a most interesting noise. Emily got annoyed at the way Erg had forgotten her.
"Put those things back, you horrible little boy!" she roared.
She was trampling towards Erg to take the invention apart, when a shocked voice said,
"Emily, children!"
They looked round to find Granny Four in the doorway. She was pale and quavery, and threatening to faint. Chapter 2 Erg and Emily tried to stop Granny Four fainting by smiling politely.
"I thought you weren't coming," said Erg.
"I couldn't leave you two poor children all alone," Granny Four said in a failing voice.
Emily and Erg looked at one another. Neither of them had quite the courage to say Granny Two was already on her way.
"Here you are, dear,"
Granny Four said to Emily. Shakily, she held out a small, elderly book.
"This will put you in a better frame of mind. It's a beautiful little book about a wicked little girl called Emily. You'll find it charming, dear."
Emily took the book. It was not the kind of gift you could say thank you for easily.
"I'll take it upstairs to read," Emily said,
and thundered away, so as not to seem ungrateful. Erg was hoping heartily that Granny Four had something better for him. But it was not much better. It was a shiny red stick, narrower at one end than the other.
"I think it's a chopstick," said Granny Four. "It was in the bazaar."
She must have seen from Erg's expression that he was not loving the chopstick particularly. She went white and leant against the side of the door.
"You can pretend it's a magic wand, dear," she said reproachfully.
Erg knew she would faint. He took the chopstick hurriedly and jammed it in one of the holes in his invention. It must have caught in the works of the clock inside the squashed tin, because when he wound the handle of the egg beater, the skewer, the sardine tin opener, and the mixer blades all began to turn round, grating and clanking as they turned. It was much more interesting now. Granny Four smothered a slight yawn and began to look healthier.
"We can take such delight in simple things," she said.
But just then, a voice shouted,
"Cooey!"
And Granny Two staggered in. She had brought 4 bags of potatoes, 2 dozen oranges, and a packet of health food. Granny Four took in the situation and turned faint again. Granny Two took in Granny Four and sprang to her side.
"You shouldn't have come, dear. You look ready to collapse. Come upstairs and lie down, and I'll make you a nice cup of tea."
And she led Granny Four away. Erg was rather pleased. It looked as if the two grannies could keep one another busy while he got on with his invention. He went into the kitchen again. This time he collected the cutters from the mincer, the handle of the hot tap, the knobs off the cooker, and the clip that held the bag of the vacuum cleaner together. Most of these things stuck into the holes on top of the biscuit tin. When Erg wound the egg beater this time, the tap top, the mincer cutters and the cooker knobs all twiddled round and round quite beautifully. The works of the clock clanked, the tin breathed in and out, and everything ground and grated, just like a real machine. Erg was trying to find a place for the clip from the vacuum cleaner when he looked up into the outraged face of Granny One.
"Granny One!"
Erg looked up again, unbelievingly. She was really there. She was putting down her neat suitcase in order to fold her arms grimly.
"You're on holiday," he said.
"I cancelled my holiday," Granny One said grimly, "to look after you. Take all those things back to the kitchen at once."
"But you're on holiday,"
Erg argued.
"You can have a holiday from saying no if you like."
"Life is always saying no," said Granny One. "Take those things back."
"If life is always saying no,"
Erg argued reasonably,
"it's saying no to me taking them back, too."
But Granny One tapped the floor with her knobby shoe, quite impervious to reason.
"I'm waiting. Do as you're told."
"Oh, bother you," said Erg.
That was a mistake.
It brought a storm down on Erg's head. It started with,
"Don't you speak to me like that,"
and ended with Erg sullenly carrying the invention out into the hall to take it to pieces in the kitchen. The noise fetched Granny Two down the stairs. She stared at Granny One.
"What are you doing here?"
said Granny Two.
"My duty," said Granny One. "I've come to look after the children." "So have I," said Granny Two. "I can manage perfectly." "Of course you can't," said Granny One. "You fuss all the time, and you spoil the children."
"And you," said Granny Two, "are cruel to them."
Granny One had her mouth open to make a blistering reply when Granny Four tottered down the stairs, faintly wringing her hands. Granny One pointed at her unbelievingly.
"Is she here too?"
"Yes, dear, but she can't manage on her own," said Granny Two.
"Indeed I can,"
Granny Four quavered, clinging to the stair rail.
"It's just as well I came,"
Granny One said grimly.
"I see I shall have to look after the lot of you."
"I do not need looking after,"
Grannies 2 and 4 said in chorus. By this time, it was clear to Erg that 3 grannies kept one another even busier than 2. Much relieved, he went into the kitchen. There, he put the hot tap-top back and the knobs from the cooker, because he knew Granny 1 would notice those. Then he went out of the back door and into the living room by the French window and hid the invention safely behind the sofa. Then he went out into the hall again. The grannies were still insulting one another.
"I didn't know you all hated one another," he said.
To his surprise, this stopped the argument at once. All the grannies turned and assured Erg that they loved one another very much. Then they turned and assured one another. After which, they all went into the kitchen for a cup of tea. Erg went back to work on his invention behind the sofa. The clip of the vacuum cleaner fitted nicely on the end of the sardine tin opener. But the invention needed something else to make it perfect. Erg could not think what it needed. He could not think clearly because the grannies were now going up and down stairs, calling out about potatoes and rattling at doors. Finally, Granny 2 came into the living room.
"Erg, dear. Oh, dear. He's vanished too. I'm so worried."
"No, I haven't,"
Erg said, bobbing up from behind the sofa.
"I'm playing at hiding,"
he explained, before Granny 2 could ask.
"What's the matter?"
"Emily's locked herself in the bathroom, dear. Be a dear and go and get her out."
Chapter 3. Erg sighed and went upstairs. But it was not a wasted journey. The thought of the bathroom put into his head exactly what would make the invention perfect. It needed glass tubes with blue water bubbling in them, going plotata, plotata, like inventions did in films. He banged at the bathroom door.
"Go away!"
boomed Emily from inside. She sounded tearful.
"I'm busy. I'm reading Granny 4's book."
"Why are you doing it in there?"
Erg asked.
"Because they keep interrupting and asking where to put potatoes and oranges."
"They want you to come out."
"I'm not going to,"
Emily boomed.
"Not till I've read it. It's beautiful. It's ever so sad."
Erg could hear her sobbing as he went away downstairs. He went to the kitchen, where the grannies were sitting among mounds of potatoes and oranges, and told them Emily was reading. He thought he would never understand grannies. One by one, they tiptoed to the bathroom, rattled the handle, and whispered there was a cup of tea outside.
"And don't hurt your eyes, dear,"
Granny 2 whispered.
"I'm pushing a biscuit under the door for you."
It seemed to be keeping them busy. Erg sat behind the sofa and got on with thinking how to make blue water go plotata, plotata. But he had still not worked it out when Granny 4 came and quavered to him that Emily had not touched her tea. Nor had he when Granny 2 came to tell him that Emily was ruining her eyes. Nor had he when Granny 1 came and told him to go out and get some nice fresh air. Erg was annoyed. He wished he had thought of locking himself in the bathroom too. And he was even more annoyed when Emily at last came out. She came straight to the sofa and crashed heavily down on it, with her chin resting on the back.
"What are you making, dear brother?"
she said in a sweet, cooing voice. Erg looked up at her suspiciously. There were tear streaks down Emily's face, and an expression on it even more saintly than Granny Four's.
"What's the matter with you?"
he said. Emily turned her eyes piously to the ceiling.
"I have taken a vow to be good, dear brother," she said. "It was that beautiful, sad book Granny Four gave me. The girl in it was called Emily, too, and she was terribly punished for her wickedness."
"Go away," said Erg.
He was not sure he could bear it if Emily was going to be a saint as well as Granny Four.
"Ah, dear brother," cooed Emily, "do not spurn me. I must stay and pray for you. You have wickedly taken all the kitchen things for that thing you're making."
"It's not a thing,"
Erg said angrily. Up till now, he had not truly considered what his invention was. But Emily so annoyed him that he said rudely,
"It's a prayer machine. You wind the handle and it answers your prayer."
"Sinful boy,"
Emily said, with her eyes on the ceiling again.
"Let us pray. I pray that my beloved brother, Urchinwald Randolph Gervase, turns into a good boy."
That was the most dreadful insult. Erg lost his temper. Usually, when people said his string of terrible names, he hit them. But Emily was so much bigger than he was that he had never yet dared hit her. Instead, in a frenzy, he wound at the egg beater. The squashed tin breathed in and out. The works of the clock ground and crunched inside. The chopstick revolved, the skewer twiddled, the sardine opener and the mincer cutters wobbled and whirled. Erg wound furiously.
"Pray, pray, 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 pray! Take Emily away!"
he shouted.
"I don't want her!"
In the midst of the noise, he thought he heard Emily stop being a saint and start shouting at him like she usually did. But he did not stop winding.
"Pray, pray, 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 pray!"
When, at last, his arm became too tired to go on, he left off winding and looked up to glare at Emily. She was not there. In her place, with its chin resting on the back of the sofa, was a large yellow teddy bear. Chapter 4 Erg stared at the teddy. The bear stared back at him. There was a sorrowful expression in its glass eyes, and reproach written all over its yellow furry muzzle.
"Go away," Erg said to it. "You're not Emily. You're just pretending."
But the bear remained, leaning on the back of the sofa, staring reproachfully. Erg took an alarmed look at his invention. Could it be a prayer machine? Could the chopstick perhaps really be a magic wand? These things just did not happen. On the other hand, he had never seen the teddy before in his life, and its furry face did look remarkably like Emily's. It was big, too, about as much too large for a teddy as Emily was for a girl. Erg tried not to think of what the grannies would say. He got up and searched the living room. Then he searched the garden. Emily was nowhere in either. Erg went out into the hall to search the rest of the house. He stopped short. The front door was wide open. Granny Three was coming in through it, lugging bright red suitcases. Granny Three, of all people! Erg stared. Granny Three's hair was a pale baby pink this time, and the new car outside in the road was bright snake green.
There's no need to stare,
Granny Three said to him.
I've come to look after you. Have you seen Emily?
No,
said Erg, trying hard not to look guilty.
Why not?
Said Granny Three.
I've brought her such a sweet dress.
She put the suitcases down and picked up a dress from the hall stand. Erg blinked. It was a very small dress. It did not look as if it would fit the teddy bear, let alone Emily. Still, this was the first time Granny Three had ever been known to give anyone anything. The kitchen door opened, and Grannies 4, 2, and 1 looked out to see what was happening. Granny Three took Granny Four in, and behind her, the unwelcoming faces of Grannies 2 and 1. She patted her pink hair and drew herself up tall.
I had to come, she said. My conscience wouldn't let me leave those 2 poor children alone.
Erg was interested to hear that Granny Three thought she had a conscience. He always thought he inherited his lack of conscience from Granny Three. He looked at the other grannies to see what they thought. Grannies 2 and 1 did indeed draw breath, as if they intended to say something thoroughly crushing. But then they looked at Erg and did not say it. Grannies 3 and 4 looked at Erg too. All 4 put on sweet smiles. And Erg felt horrible. He discovered he must have a conscience too. He could not think why else he should feel so guilty about that teddy bear. Granny 3 said brightly,
Well, what can I do? I brought my apron.
Erg crept away from them upstairs and searched the rest of the house. But Emily was not anywhere, and when Erg went downstairs again, the teddy still sat accusingly on the sofa. Erg was forced to believe that he had indeed turned Emily into a teddy bear. He dared not tell the grannies. When they called him to lunch, he said,
Emily's locked in the bathroom again.
But she'll miss her dinner,
quavered Granny Four. Granny Three, who had settled in as if she had always lived there, said,
Then there'll be more for us. No, dear,
she added to Granny One,
you must always mash potatoes with cream. I brought some cream.
Granny Two could not take the matter so calmly.
We must get Emily out before she grows up peculiar, she said,
and she set off upstairs to the bathroom. Erg raced up with her and was just in time to wedge the landing carpet under the door so that it would not open. He left Granny Two there, rattling and calling, and raced down to the living room. The teddy still sat there, vast and yellow on the sofa. But Erg felt it would be just like Emily to turn into something else while he was not looking. Then he might not be able to find her to turn her back. He decided to take the teddy in to lunch with him. That was terrible. Granny Three actually smiled kindly. Granny Four took the teddy and sat it in a chair of its own.
Is it a teddy weddy, then?
She said, and pretended to feed the teddy with mashed potato. Granny One kept looking from Erg to the teddy to Granny Four and snorting sarcastically. And when Granny Two came downstairs, she said,
Oh, the fairies have brought you a teddy. How exciting!
In between all this, all the grannies wondered where Emily was and said she was growing up peculiar. But halfway through lunch, Erg noticed the glass salt cellar, and he saw the way out of his troubles. Let him put that salt cellar upside down with a drinking straw in it. Let both be filled with blue water going plotter-ta-plotter-ta. and Erg knew the machine would answer his prayer and turn the teddy back into Emily again. The trouble was, could he do it before the grannies noticed that the teddy's reproachful face was exactly like Emily's? Erg knew that he was going to have to keep all four grannies very busy. Chapter 5. When lunch was over, the grannies all put on aprons to wash up. Erg said he would take some lunch to Emily. Granny 1 sternly handed him 2 oranges.
"Eat those for vitamins," she said.
"That's right, dear," agreed Granny 2. "Push Emily's under the door for her."
Erg went upstairs and parked the teddy and the lunch in the bath. Then he wedged the door again and went down to the living room. He peeled both oranges and broke the peel into very small bits, which he scattered all over the carpet. But it takes a lot to keep 4 grannies busy. Erg was still gulping and feeling much too full of orange when Granny 1 escaped from the washing up and stood in the doorway, staring grimly at the bits of orange peel.
"I'll use the vacuum cleaner on it, shall I?"
Erg said brightly.
"No, you will not," said Granny 1.
She went and got the vacuum cleaner herself and firmly plugged it in. Erg watched expectantly as she switched it on. Since the clip that held the bag together was now part of the prayer machine, there was nothing to hold the dust in the cleaner at all. Dust came out in a cloud, like an explosion. Big wads of dirt followed it, and after that came orange peel, whirling and whizzing. Granny 1 switched the cleaner off in a hurry and screamed for help. Granny 4 hurried in and turned faint in the dust. Granny 3 came and turned the vacuum cleaner upside down. All the rest of the dust fell out of it.
"I don't understand these things," Granny 3 said fretfully. "Telephone for a man." "Pull out the plug first," gasped Granny 2, hastening to the scene. "There's electricity leaking into it all the time."
"Nonsense," snapped Granny 1, coming to her senses. "Erg, what have you done to this machine?"
But Erg was already tiptoeing into the kitchen. Hastily, he unscrewed the salt cellar and poured the salt into the nearest thing, which happened to be the sugar bowl. He snatched up a packet of transparent drinking straws. Finally, he turned the tap on over the half-finished washing up. It was not long before bubbly water was pouring over onto the floor. Erg turned the tap off again.
"Hey!"
he yelled.
"You left the tap running!"
This fetched all 4 grannies back at a gallop. Satisfied, Erg went back into the dust-hung living room and collected the invention from behind the sofa. He took it up to the bathroom and locked himself in with it and the salt cellar and the straws and the teddy and Emily's lunch. He thought he had given himself an hour's peace at least. But it takes more than dust and water to keep 4 grannies busy. 10 minutes later, Granny 4 was rattling at the bathroom door.
"Emily, dear, are you all right?"
"It's me in here now," Erg called. "Emily's gone for a walk."
"Then could you let me in, dear?"
Granny 4 called back.
"I'd like a little wash before I go for my rest."
"You can't rest,"
Erg called. He was horrified. Next thing he knew, they would all be up here, fussing about with cups of tea and hot water bottles and things.
"Why not, dear?"
quavered Granny 4. Erg cast about for a reason. His eye fell on the washing basket.
There's all the washing to do, he shouted. I'll bring it downstairs for you, shall I?
I'd better go and tell them, quavered Granny Four and tottered away.
But when Erg looked in the washing basket, it was empty. Nothing daunted, Erg took off the clothes he was wearing and put them in the basket. Grannies always said clothes were dirty when you had hardly worn them anyway. Then he went to Emily's room and his own and collected all the clothes he could find there. Erg unfolded them and scrunched them up in his hands and rammed them into the basket. Then he put on clean clothes and staggered downstairs with the basket.
Here you are,
he said, emptying the crumpled heap on the kitchen floor. The four grannies were gathered there, eating chocolates out of the box Granny Three had brought. They gave the heap various looks of suffering and dismay. Granny Four turned pale. Granny Two sprang up, saying she would fill the sink with nice hot water.
You're allowed to use the washing machine,
Erg said.
Oh, no, dear, said Granny Two. Electricity doesn't mix with water. It gets into the clothes, you know.
On reflection, Erg thought that washing in the sink would keep them busier. He took the basket back to the bathroom. Then he undid the toilet cistern and took out the blue block in it to make the blue water that was to go plotter-ta, plotter-ta. Then he thought he had better check to see how busy the grannies were. He peeped round the kitchen door to find them quite out of control again. Granny Three was standing in the heap of clothes, sorting them out. She took up a shirt, shook it fiercely, and passed it to Granny One.
This is clean, too, she said. I think someone has been making work for us.
Quite right, said Granny One, holding the shirt up to the light. Clean and ironed.
She passed the shirt to Granny Two, who smoothed it out and folded it carefully, and passed it to Granny Four. Granny Four turned to put the shirt on a large heap of others and saw Erg watching.
Will you take these back upstairs, dear? She said.
All right, said Erg, and then I'll bring down the rest of the washing, shall I?
Is there more?
Granny Three asked, transferring her angry look from the next shirt to Erg.
Oh, yes, said Erg.
There was going to be, if it killed him. He went upstairs with the pile of clothes and locked himself in the bathroom again. At least, Erg thought, he had kept the grannies too busy to think of Emily for some time. But at the rate they were going, they would be asking about her any minute now. Erg took the plate of lunch out of the bath and used it to dirty 10 of the shirts in the pile. But though he spread the lunch very thinly and carefully with his toothbrush, it would not go round more than 10 shirts. He found himself looking longingly at his invention where it sat in the wash basin. Even without the blue water, it had already worked quite well. Erg decided to give it another try. He wound the egg beater.
Pray, 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 pray.
The tin crunched in and out. The mixer blades, the skewer, and the sardine opener grated and revolved. The vacuum cleaner clip, the mincer cutters, and the chopstick wobbled and twirled.
Make the washing keep them busy,
Erg said, winding away. Chapter 6 Erg's clean clothes had become quite well covered with lunch and the blue from the toilet block. He took them off and put them in the basket with the 10 shirts. In their place, he put on the first clothes left in the heap. Emily's nightdress, his own jeans, and Emily's school shirt. Dressed in this flowing raiment, He went down to the living room to roll in the dust there. But Granny Four was there, feebly flicking with a duster.
"What are you doing, dear?"
"Playing oil shakes," said Erg.
He went out into the garden and rolled in a flower bed. Granny Four was not in the living room when he came back. To Erg's horror, she met him outside the bathroom, carrying the teddy.
"You forgot Teddy Weddy, dear."
It was awful how the grannies kept getting out of control. Erg locked the door and took off the raiment. He put on the next things, Emily's tartan skirt and a frilly blouse. This time, he took the teddy with him and wedged the bathroom door shut.
"What are you doing now, dear?"
asked Granny Four.
"Playing North Sea Oil," Erg explained. "The teddy is my spoon."
He went and rolled in the flower bed again. This time, he got safely back to the bathroom. But he did not dare leave the teddy behind when he set out again in the next set of clothes, which were his own striped pyjamas.
"I'm playing going to bed,"
he told Granny Four before she could ask, and went and rolled in the flower bed once more. While he was rolling, Granny Two and Granny Three came into the garden with a basket of washing to hang on the clothesline. They were struggling to hold a ballooning skirt and a kicking pair of jeans in what seemed a very strong wind. Erg lay in the earth and watched. The skirt made a strong dive and almost got away. Both grannies caught it. It took them some time to get it pegged, and the dress they took up next seemed to be blowing even harder. Erg licked one finger and thoughtfully held it up. There was almost no wind, yet the row of things on the line were flapping and struggling and kicking as if there was half a gale. Interesting. But where was Granny One? Erg got up and went through the back door into the kitchen to check on Granny One. She was not there. But while Erg was looking round to make sure, the pile of wet washing on the draining board rolled heavily over and went flap, down onto the kitchen floor. Erg could see it oozing and trickling and spreading over the floor. He watched with interest. The washing was definitely working its way over towards the nearest heap of potatoes, to get itself nice and dirty again. Erg was delighted. This prayer machine worked. He went upstairs in his earthy pyjamas, convinced that the chopstick really must be some kind of magic wand. He only needed to get the blue water working, and he could turn Emily back again. But Granny One was outside the bathroom door, knocking and rattling at it. She turned and looked at Erg. He had rarely seen her look so grim.
"Take those pyjamas off at once. What are you and Emily?"
"The washing," Erg said hastily, "has fallen on the kitchen floor."
To his relief, Granny One pushed past him and went rushing downstairs to rescue the washing. Erg locked himself in the bathroom again and put the teddy back in the bath. He was beginning to feel that four grannies were too much for any boy to control. There was another annoying thing, too. There were no more of his own clothes left to wear. He had got them all dirty. He stayed in his pyjamas and got down to work on the salt cellar at last. He had the salt cellar nicely filled with blue water when he was interrupted again by quivering shouts from the garden. Erg could not resist opening the bathroom window to look. There was washing all over the garden. Some of it was blowing and kicking in the gooseberry bushes. The rest of it was whirling round and round the lawn with all four grannies chasing it. Satisfied, Erg shut the window. He was determined to finish his invention. It was much trickier than he had thought. The hole in the lid of the salt cellar was not big enough to get a straw through. Erg had to enlarge it with the skewer. And when he had got the straw to go through, he could not get the salt cellar to stand properly upside down on top of the machine. He had to bend open the blades of the electric mixer to hold it. And when he had done that, he still could not get the blue water to go plotter-ta-plotter-ta. It simply ran down through the straw and into the inside of the biscuit tin. When Erg wound the handle of the egg beater, the water came out of the holes in the tin in blue showers.
"Bother!" said Erg.
As he put more blue water into the salt cellar, he began to feel that everything was getting out of hand. The machine would not work. The earthy front of his pyjamas was blue and soaking, and so was most of the bathroom. And, to crown it all, there was a new outcry from the grannies from the kitchen this time. This was followed by feet on the stairs. Next moment, all four grannies were outside the bathroom door.
"Come out of there at once," snapped Granny One.
"We're so worried, dear,"
hushed Granny Two.
"It was very unkind of you, dear,"
quavered Granny Four,
"to fill the sugar bowl with salt."
But it was Granny Three who really alarmed Erg.
"You know," she said, "that child has done something with Emily. I've not set eyes on her all the time I've been here."
Erg's eyes went guiltily to the sad face of the teddy in the bath. Outside the door, Granny Two said,
"I shall phone the fire brigade to get him out."
"And spank him when he is,"
Granny One agreed. Erg listened no more. He rammed the salt cellar and the straw back in place and wound the egg beater.
"Bray, bray, 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 bray."
Blue water squirted. The works of the clock sploshed. Round and round went the chopstick, the mixer blades, the salt cellar, the skewer, the sardine opener, the mincer cutters, the straw, and the clip of the vacuum cleaner.
"Only one, Granny,"
prayed Erg, winding desperately.
"I can't manage more than one. Please!"
Chapter 7. There was a sudden silence outside the bathroom door. "It's worked," Erg thought.
"Erg?"
said a large, quavery voice outside.
"Erg? Open this door!"
"In a minute!"
Erg called. The words were hardly out of his mouth when the bathroom door leapt and crashed open against the wall. The one granny Erg had asked for came in. Only one. But Erg stared at her in horror. She was 6 feet tall and huge all over. Her hair was the baby pink of Granny Three's. Her face was the stern face of Granny One, except that it wore the worried look of Granny Two. Her voice was the quavery voice of Granny Four, but it was 4 times as loud. Erg knew at a glance that what he had here was all four grannies in one. They had blended into Super Granny. He jumped up to run. Super Granny swept towards Erg. With one hand, she caught Erg's arm in a grip of steel. At the same time, she was keenly scanning the rest of the bathroom.
"What is this mess?"
she quavered menacingly.
"And where is Emily?"
Erg dared not tell the truth. He avoided the teddy's accusing stare.
"Emily went to play in the park," he said.
"Very well," said Super Granny. "We shall go and get her. Come along, dear."
"I can't go like this,"
Erg protested, looking down at his earthy, blue, wet pyjamas. All the grannies were a little deaf when it suited them. Super Granny was super deaf.
"Come along, dear," she said.
She plucked the teddy out of the bath and planted it in Erg's arms.
"Don't forget Teddy Weddy, the fairies brought you."
And she pulled Erg towards the door. All Erg could think of was to spare one hand from the teddy and snatch up his invention from the wash basin as he was pulled away. Blue water from it trickled down his legs as Super Granny towed him downstairs. But Erg hung on to it grimly. As soon as he got a chance, he was going to wind the egg beater again and get Super Granny sent to Mars, which was surely where she belonged. But in the hall, Super Granny's piercing eye fell on the prayer machine.
"You can't take that nasty thing, dear," she said.
She dragged it away from Erg and dropped it on the floor. Miserably, Erg tried dropping the teddy too. But Super Granny picked it up again and once more planted it in Erg's arms.
"Come along, dear."
Erg found himself in the street outside the house, in wet blue pyjamas, with one hand clutching a huge teddy and the other in the iron grip of Super Granny. Behind him, the front door crashed shut. Erg could tell by the noise that it had locked itself.
"Have you got a key?"
he said hopelessly. All the grannies were a little vague at times, when it suited them. Super Granny was super vague.
"I don't know, dear. Come along."
Erg knew he was locked out of the house and the prayer machine locked in. As a last hope, he tried lingering beside Granny Three's snake-green car.
"Can we drive to the park?"
But three of the grannies did not know how to drive, and that cancelled out the one who did.
"I don't know how to drive, dear," said Super Granny.
So Erg was forced to trot along the pavement beside Super Granny. They kept passing people Erg knew. Not one of these people spared a glance for Super Granny. It was as if they saw pink-haired superwomen every day. But every single person stared at Erg and Erg's pyjamas and the huge teddy bear. Erg tried to keep an expression on his face of a boy playing woad-stained ancient British convicts who had just slain a fierce teddy bear. But either that was too hard an idea for one face to express, or Erg did not express it very well. Almost everybody laughed. Erg was glad when they reached the park and found it nearly empty, except for some girls on the swings. Here, Super Granny seemed to forget they had come to look for Emily. But that did not help Erg. Super Granny led him over to the slide in the swings.
"You play, dear. Slide down the slide while I rest my poor feet."
She sat heavily on the nearest park bench. Erg tried to defy her.
"What if I don't slide down the slide?"
he asked.
"Awful things happen to little boys who disobey,"
Super Granny quavered placidly. Erg looked her in the steely eye and believed it. He leant the teddy against the steps of the slide and began bitterly to climb up. He knew that when he got to the top, the girls on the swings would see him and laugh too. But when he got to the top of the slide, everyone had left the swings, except one big girl. She was such a big girl that she had to swing with her legs stuck straight out in front of her. Erg sat at the top of the slide and stared. That big girl was Emily. Unbelievingly, Erg craned to look over his shoulder. The big yellow teddy bear was still leaning against the steps of the slide. Had the invention perhaps not been a prayer machine after all? Erg looked hopefully over at the park bench. Super Granny still sat there. Her pink head was nodding in a super doze. Erg flung himself on the slide and shot down it. He shot off the bottom and raced across to the swings.
Emily!
He panted.
What happened? Where did you go?
Emily gave Erg an unfriendly look.
To have lunch with my friend Josephine, she said. Dear brother, she added,
and stood up against the swing, ready to shoot forward on it and kick Erg in the stomach.
Oh, be nice, please,
Erg begged her.
Why did you go?
Because you were so horrid to me, said Emily. And then, when I opened the front door, Granny Three was outside, heaving a teddy out of her car, and I couldn't face her. I hate Granny Three. So I hid behind the door while she went to give you the teddy, and then I ran round to Josephine's.
So the teddy had come from Granny Three. It was all a terrible mistake. It was a natural mistake, perhaps, because Granny Three had never been known to give anyone anything before. But a mistake all the same. And to make matters worse, Super Granny had noticed Erg was not sliding. She sprang up and came scouring across to the swings, calling for Erg in a long, quavering hoot like a magnified owl. It was such a noise that people were running from the other end of the park to see what was the matter. Erg watched her coming, feeling like a drowning man whose life is passing before him in a flash. The prayer machine had been working all along, he knew now. He had not asked it to turn Emily into a teddy bear, but he had asked it to send her away, and it did. It had not needed blue water. It had made the washing keep the grannies busy without. It was the chopstick that did things, and, like all such things, Erg saw wretchedly as Super Granny pounded towards him. It gave you three wishes, and he had used all three. He had no way of getting rid of Super Granny at all. Emily stared at the vast running Super Granny.
Whoever is that?
Super Granny, said Erg. She's all of them, and she's after me. Please help me. I'll never be horrible to you again.
Don't make promises you can't keep, said Emily.
But she let go of the swing and stood up. Super Granny pounded up.
There you are, Emily, she hooted. I've been so worried.
I was only in the park, Emily said. I think we'll go home now.
She was, Erg was interested to see, nearly as large as Super Granny.
Yes, dear,
Super Granny said, almost meekly. And when Emily picked up the teddy and gave it to her, Super Granny took it without complaining. They set off home.
How are we going to get in?
Erg whispered to Emily.
She's locked us out.
No problem. I took the key, Emily said.
Halfway home, Super Granny's feet began super killing her. She came over super faint and had to lean on Erg and Emily. Erg had to stand staggering under her huge weight on his own while Emily fetched out her key and opened the front door.
Good Lord, said Emily.
The hall was full of dirty clothes. Dry, dirty clothes were now galloping and billowing downstairs. Wet, dirty clothes were crawling soggily through from the kitchen. Emily shot a horrified look at Super Granny and went charging indoors to catch the nearest pair of dirty jeans. She tripped over the invention in the middle of the floor. She fell flat on her face.
Crunch, crack!
The egg beater rolled out from one side in two pieces. The chopstick rolled the other way. Snapped in half.
Ow!
Said Emily. The clothes flopped down and lay where they fell. Super Granny's mighty arm seemed to disentangle itself between Erg's hands. It was suddenly four arms. Erg let go and found himself surrounded by the four grannies, all staring into the hall too.
Get up, Emily,
snapped Granny One.
Oh, Erg, said Granny Two. Out of doors in pyjamas. You are growing up peculiar.
I shall take your teddy away again,
said Granny Three.
Look at this mess. You don't deserve nice toys.
Let's have a nice cup of tea,
quavered Granny Four. A thought struck her. She turned pale.
We can do without sugar,
she said faintly.
It's better for us.
Erg looked from one to the other. He was very relieved and very grateful to Emily. But he knew he was not going to enjoy the next 3 days. Auntie Bee's Day Out.
I shall take the children for a lovely day at the seaside tomorrow,
said Auntie Bee. The children felt miserable. Auntie Bee was huge, with a loud voice. She had been staying with the Pearsons for a week then, and they all felt crushed and cross.
You needn't bother to drive us, Tom,
said Auntie Bee.
I can easily go by bus.
This was Auntie Bee's way of telling Mr. Pearson he was to drive them to the seaside. Mr. Pearson looked very cheerful.
Isn't that lucky? I have to take the car for its inspection tomorrow.
When Auntie Bee decided to do something, she did it. She turned to Mrs. Pearson.
Well, you can help me carry the things, Eileen.
Mrs. Pearson hastily discovered that she was going to the dentist.
Then Nancy will help,
said Auntie Bee.
Nancy's so sensible.
No, I'm not, said Nancy.
So, that's all right,
said Auntie Bee. She never attended to anything the children said.
Nancy can look after Debbie, and Simon can carry the things.
The number of things Auntie Bee needed for a day at the seaside would have been about right if she was going to climb Mount Everest. Mr. Pearson helped her pile them in the hall, in 22 separate heaps. Auntie Bee was so afraid of losing or forgetting some of them that she wrote out 22 labels, each with their names and address on it, and tied them to the bundles. Meanwhile, Mrs. Pearson cut up 4 loaves to make the number of sandwiches Auntie Bee thought they would need.
And little jellies and yogurt cups,
Auntie Bee said, racing into the kitchen.
Such a good idea!
Mrs. Pearson was so glad to be getting rid of Auntie Bee for a day that she made them 2 jellies each.
I feel like a human sacrifice,
Simon said.
How does she think I could carry all that and manage Honey as well?
Honey was due to have puppies any day now. Simon was too anxious about her to leave her behind. Auntie Bee came downstairs, shaking out a vast swimsuit. It was electric blue, with shiny orange hearts all over it. Nancy blinked and wondered what Auntie Bee would look like wearing it.
That's pretty,
said Debbie, who loved bright colours.
I shall make Teddy a swimsuit like that.
I hope it rains, said Nancy.
Unfortunately, the next day was bright and sunny. But they missed the early bus because of Teddy and Honey. Debbie had pinned a scarf around Teddy like a nappy, and she had written him a label too.
Deb's Ted with care in emergency. Phone Millwich 29722.
As soon as Auntie B saw Teddy, she said,
No, dear, we only take things we need today.
Debbie's face took on its most mulish look, and the argument only ended when Auntie B saw Honey drooping joylessly on the end of her lead.
You can't take him, dear. He might have his puppies at any moment.
Just as Auntie B never attended to children, she never attended to whether dogs were she's. The argument only finished when Simon found he could not carry all his bundles, even without Honey.
"You'll have to leave the stove and the kettle,"
said Mrs. Pearson, very anxious to see them off.
"In that case, we must take plenty of boiled water," said Auntie B. "Think of the germs."
So Simon's bundles were repacked, and they set off to catch the later bus. Nancy went first with a light load of one tartan rug, one carrier bag of sandwiches, a first aid box, and a bundle of buckets and spades. Auntie B sailed behind, hung about with one folding chair, one striped umbrella, 3 pints of milk, a bag of sweaters, a bag of suntan cream, a packet of sandwiches, 2 dozen hard-boiled eggs, a complete change of outsize clothes, 3 books, and a radio. Debbie trotted behind that with a bundle of towels, a beach ball in a string bag, and a basket full of jellies and cake, with Teddy defiantly sitting in it too. A long, long way behind came Simon. He was not sure what was in the rucksack, nor what was in his other 6 bundles, but he could see thermos flasks sticking out of one and an electric torch out of another. His knees buckled under it all, and Honey kept tangling her lead around them. Honey did not seem happy.
"It will serve him right if he has his puppies in the sea,"
Auntie B said, and counted the bundles to make sure they had remembered them all. Nothing much happened on the bus ride, except that Honey threatened to be sick. When they got to Millhaven, it was quite late in the morning and already very crowded.
"Crowds! Germs!"
said Auntie B, counting everything again.
"We should have caught the early bus."
She hoisted up her 12 bundles and set off happily down the steps to the sand, calling,
"Don't bother to help with all this. I can manage perfectly."
They struggled after her down the steps and caught her up on the sand.
"Debbie," said Auntie B, "you take the umbrella. If Nancy takes the folding chair, I can manage perfectly."
"No, I won't," said Debbie. "It was you who brought it."
"Why don't we stop just here?"
Nancy asked. Debbie's refusal brought out the worst in Auntie B. She gave a scornful look around at the deck chairs, rugs, and sandcastles on the crowded beach, and called out to the man who hired the deck chairs in her loudest, most hooting voice.
"My good man, can you direct me to somewhere less crowded?"
The deck chair man scratched his head.
"Well, it thins out a bit up there, ma'am, but you can't go in the rocks. Tourists are not allowed on the island."
Auntie B stuck up her head indignantly at being called a tourist and set off at a trot where the man pointed, hooting to the children to come along. They ploughed after her, making zigzags around the other families, who all stared because Auntie B kept turning around and hooting at them. To the right were the lovely white waves of the sea, rolling, folding, and breaking with a joyful smash. But Auntie B would not hear of stopping. Honey, on the other hand, would not walk. She had never seen the sea before. All she knew was that it was the biggest bath in the universe, and she dreaded baths. Simon had a terrible time with her. Nancy suggested that they stop for the donkeys, and for the swings, and for one of the ice cream carts. But Auntie B just cried out,
"Germs!"
and scudded on. She would not stop until they had left all the people behind, and there was nothing but rocks. There was a kind of road of rocks stretching into the sea and, at the end of the road, an island. It was quite small, only big enough to hold a tuft of trees.
"The very place!"
cried Auntie B, and went out over the rocks like Steve Ovette winning a race. Honey, for some reason, was even more afraid of the island than the sea. Simon had to walk backwards, dragging her. When he turned around at the end, he found there was a barbed wire fence round the island and a large notice on the gate. "Island, island, keep out." There was no time to wonder about that. Auntie B was already charging through the trees. Simon dragged Honey past another notice, "No trespassers," and yet another, "Trespassers will be sorry." By that time, Auntie B had stopped and he caught up.
"I don't think we ought to be on this island," Nancy was saying.
"Nobody's afraid of three ignorant notices, dear," said Auntie B. "We're going to camp here."
Everyone was too tired to protest. They threw down the bundles and thankfully tipped the sand out of their shoes. Honey lay down, panting. She looked rather ill. Auntie B prepared to put on her swimsuit. First, she spread the rug out. Then she arranged the chair and the screen and the umbrella to make a sort of hut. Finally, she crawled mountainously in to undress. Nancy and Debbie undressed where they were, and Simon tried to do the same. His shirt was stuck to his back by something sticky and smelling loudly of strawberry.
"I think the jellies have leaked on you,"
Debbie said, and crawled over to look at the yogurt cups in her basket. The sun had melted every one, and, in the mysterious way things happen at the seaside, every one was half full of sand. Teddy was soaked in strawberry juice.
"This is awful,"
said Debbie, and put Teddy on the branch of a tree to dry.
"Don't grumble, dear,"
Auntie B called out of her hut.
"We're having a lovely time."
The island gave a curious shudder. It made them very uneasy.
"Auntie B," said Nancy, "I really think we ought to move."
"Nonsense, dear," called Auntie B.
At that, the island gave a bigger shudder and a heave. It felt as if they were going over a humpbacked bridge in a car. And everything was different. There was a strong wind. They were all kneeling or standing on very short grass, shivering. There were no trees. Teddy was hanging in the air above Auntie B's hut. They could hear the sound of waves crashing all around in the distance, from which they could tell they were on another, bigger island. But they had no idea where. Almost at once, a hot man in a beret came panting up the green slope towards them. He was wearing a brown sweater with green patches on the elbows and shoulders.
"I say," he shouted, "you lot can't picnic here. You're right in the middle of a gun range there."
The umbrella heaved. Auntie B appeared, looking larger than ever. She had her skirt around her neck like a poncho.
"Don't talk nonsense, my good man," she said.
The soldier stared at her, and at Teddy hanging over her head. He gave a sort of swallow.
"We leave here over my dead body," said Auntie B, and dived back inside her hut.
"That's just what it will be,"
the soldier started to say, when the island once more tried to shake them off, if that's what it was doing. There was a jerk, and they were on a small rock in the middle of a lake.
"People don't order me about,"
Auntie Bee remarked from inside her hut. There was another jerk, and they were somewhere dark, with water heaving nearby. Honey began to shiver.
"We're having a lovely day,"
Auntie Bee asserted from behind the umbrella. The island jerked again, quite angrily, and it was freezing cold, but light enough to see by. There was frost or ice under their bare knees. The frosty space was rather small and heaving, as if it was floating. The sea was very near, dark green, in frighteningly big waves.
"This is an iceberg," said Nancy, with her teeth chattering. "That's cheating."
"How many more kinds of island are there?"
shivered Simon.
"No, don't tell me. You'll put ideas in its head. Good dog, honey."
"Oh!"
Debbie shrieked.
"Teddy's gone! I want to go home! Teddy!"
Auntie Bee, shielded from the ice by her blanket and screened from the view by her hut, called out,
"Don't spoil our lovely day by screaming, dear."
The iceberg jerked, a bob of annoyance. They were on ice still, but this time it was the top of a mountain. Instead of water, they were surrounded by clouds.
"Teddy!"
cried Debbie.
"Lovely day!"
repeated Auntie Bee. Another jerk instantly flung them into sweltering heat, somewhere low down and steamy. Water bubbled between their toes, and brown water slid past a few feet away. Honey growled and Nancy gasped. An unmistakable alligator slid by with the water.
"I agree with Debbie," said Nancy. "I want to go home."
"Can't we shut Auntie Bee up?"
Simon whispered.
"She keeps annoying it."
"You'll feel better when you're in the water, dears,"
Auntie Bee called out. Nancy was still shouting,
"No!"
when they were pitched somewhere cooler, crowded among bushes under a tall tree. There seemed to be a river in front of them, and park railings beyond that. A banana skin fell heavily on Simon's head. He looked up to find that the tree was full of interested monkeys. Several of them came down to inspect Auntie Bee's hut. To Simon's amazement, a small boy was staring at them through the railings.
"Hey, Mum," said the small boy, "can I have a picnic on there too?"
"I want to go home too,"
Simon said uncomfortably. Two of the monkeys had decided that Auntie Bee's umbrella was fun. They tried to take it up the tree with them. Auntie Bee's hand appeared around the edge of it, slapping.
"Don't be so impatient, dears. I'm nearly ready."
The monkeys had barely time to chitter angrily before that island tossed them aside too. Auntie Bee's hut was suddenly in the middle of a neat flower bed. Debbie was rolling in red geraniums. There was a great deal of noise all around, but it was not water. It sounded like traffic. Simon jumped to his feet. He was on a mound, surrounded by cars and lorries. Faces were pressed against the windows of a passing bus, staring at him.
"We're on a traffic island now," he said, "in the middle of a roundabout."
Nancy stood up too.
"What will it think of next? I say, Honey's not here."
"Ready, dears,"
called Auntie Bee. she stood up out of her hut in her bathing suit. Simon was gazing around for honey, but even he was distracted by the sight. Auntie Bee was gigantic. The flowers looked pale beside her. She was like an enormous beach ball, only brighter than a beach ball has any right to be. The people going by in cars could not take their eyes off her. The bus ran into the curb. Two cars drove up onto the flower beds. Brakes squealed and metal clanged all around the roundabout. Only Debbie was not distracted by the sight. She was fond of bright colours.
"This is the roundabout at the end of our road," she said.
"Quick!" said Nancy.
"Run!" said Simon. "Before she says anything!"
They raced down among the flowers. Behind them, Auntie Bee hooted,
"I do think cars should be banned on beaches,"
and vanished from sight, which caused a further pile-up of cars. Nancy, Simon and Debbie dodged between the cars and ran on, up their road and into their own house.
"Why are you back so soon?"
asked Mrs. Pearson. She did not seem to have gone to the dentist. "Where's Auntie Bee?" She could not understand what had happened. All Debbie could think of was Teddy, last seen floating in the air over a soldier. All Simon could think of was Honey, last seen growling at an alligator. All Nancy could think of was that she was never going near another island of any kind as long as she lived. Neither Mr. nor Mrs. Pearson grasped that something truly odd had happened until the phone began to ring. The first caller was very polite and very high up in the army. They had Teddy, he said, on an island somewhere in Scotland. Could any of the Pearsons please reveal the secret formula that made Teddy float in the air? Was it anything to do with a strawberry juice Teddy was soaked in? When nobody could tell him what made Teddy float, the high-up man said that it certainly had military importance, and would Debbie mind if they kept Teddy for analysis? They would send a new Teddy.
"I want my Ted!"
Debbie shouted, but the army said it was impossible. The next person to phone was a Swiss mountain guide, who had found the beach ball on top of a mountain, complete with the label giving their address. He asked if they wanted it back. They never did answer that, because a policeman called just then, looking rather grim and asking to speak to Auntie Bee. She had caused a breach of the peace, he said, and left her radio in the middle of Silas Street roundabout. But nobody, of course, knew where Auntie Bee was by then. Almost straight away, there was a puzzled phone call from Iceland. A trawler captain had found a bag of Pearson sweaters floating on an iceberg and wondered if there were any survivors from the wreck. Mr. Pearson had just sorted that one out when someone telephoned all the way from South America. His English was not very good, but he seemed to be saying that the water had ruined the battery in the electric torch. But he wanted to assure them that the buckets and spades were quite safe and very useful.
"Ask about Honey,"
said Simon. But the person in South America had not seen a dog, nor even a satisfied-looking alligator.
"Where's Auntie Bee, though?" Mrs. Pearson kept asking.
It was soon clear that Auntie Bee was still travelling. The Foreign Office phoned next. There was, they said, a mysterious complaint from the Russian embassy. A basket full of jelly and sand in yogurt cups, with the Pearson's address on it, had somehow appeared on the conning tower of a Russian submarine. The Russians were holding it for analysis. The Foreign Office wanted to know if they would find anything important in the yogurt cups.
"I don't think so," said Mrs. Pearson weakly. They didn't find my sister as well, did they?"
But Auntie Bee had not been heard of, nor had she been seen by an excited lady in Greece who phoned next. This lady wanted the Pearsons to know that she was not so poor that she could not find 2 dozen hard-boiled eggs for herself, thank you. And she was throwing away the bag of clothes. They were too big for anyone on the island. She rang off before anyone could try to explain. The American embassy rang next. Auntie Bee's umbrella had been found in the sea off Honolulu. They wondered if Auntie Bee had been drowned. So did the Pearsons. But since the next 2 calls were from Sweden and Japan, it began to look as if Auntie Bee was still being jerked from island to island. Quite late that night, the London Zoo phoned.
"It's taken us all this time to trace you,"
they said, rather injured.
"The address fell off on our monkey island. How did you come to leave your dog there anyway? The monkeys were trying to play with the puppies."
Mr. Pearson said, a little wildly, that he could explain everything. Then he found that the zoo wanted him to collect Honey and her 6 new puppies at once. They were in the children's zoo. Simon was greatly relieved. He went with his father to fetch Honey, and did not mind in the least when Honey was carsick, though Mr. Pearson did. Meanwhile, the others were still answering the telephone, and there was still no news of Auntie Bee. They forgot what a trial Auntie Bee had been, and became worried. They had tender, troubled thoughts about where she could be. Nancy feared she was marooned on a desert island like Robinson Crusoe, all alone in her bathing suit. Debbie said she was somewhere where they spoke quite another language. Mrs. Pearson wrung her hands and said she knew Bee was in China, under arrest. 3 days later, Auntie Bee rang up herself.
"You'll never guess, Tom," she hooted. "I'm in the Bahamas. I've no idea how I got here, and I've had to borrow money for the food. You needn't bother to come and get me, Tom. I can manage."
Mr. Pearson thought of all the phone calls, and Debbie still in tears about Teddy and, very crossly, about Honey sick in his clean car.
"I'm glad you can manage, Bee," he said. "Come and see us when you get home."
And he rang off. You've been listening to Freaky Families by Diana Wynne-Jones, narrated by Penelope Rawlins.